Hey, how you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Great show for you today, and I have a special guest that I just connected with, and I'm so excited to be able to cover this topic that we're going to talk about because, can I tell you, it's important, okay? I have my guest today with me, Barry Ray. He is with the Florida Keys Environmental Coalition, and we are going to be jumping right in and talking about GM mosquitoes. Barry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
Hi. So can we just get right to it? I want to tell people, if you go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, you can find out all of the great things Barry has been involved with, including being involved in 2010 with the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And certainly sounds like you have a great passion for the environment, especially the Florida Keys, Barry.
Well, the environment calls you. It's one of those things that when you want to protect what you love, you either step up and do it or you watch it go by the wayside. So many of us of the same background and cut from the same cloth is bound together. And I want to make one comment right at the beginning. We lost our poster child, our troubadour, Mila DeMere. And that was very unfortunate. Lost her this year. And we hope everybody goes and signs her petition. We want 1 million for Mila. So
That sounds good.
On your site there.
We posted a link at Responsible Eating and Living for this show. Anybody who's interested in the link, or they could go directly to the Florida Keys Environmental Coalition also. But I also wanted to note, before we get into the details of this particular issue regarding genetically modified mosquitoes, that you, Barry, you have a master's of science in electrical engineering, so you understand some of the science that's going on with this particular issue, too, and I think that's important.
Yeah, I have a master's of science, but, you know, we don't, once you grow into a career, you don't limit yourself to where your original education was, and I haven't. I've been, the Deepwater Horizon forced me into areas that I really hadn't planned on going into, everything from resiliency to, emergency response networks, things like that here in the Keys that I helped participate in. And we actually gathered about 400 people that became HAZWOPR trained so that we could be responsive down here. It was one of the things we did originally. We came up with techniques and systems to be able to combat oil if it did arrive on our shores, very unique, novel things that we were looking at. Together, I worked with the PhD that was in charge of marine science down at the community college here in Keys, the Florida Keys Community College. And from there, we were assaulted with another challenge, and that was the genetically modified mosquito. And this at first sounded like a great idea. We all went, and I actually tuned in from here in Isle Mirada, where I live, about 90 miles north of Key West, and listened to the meeting of OxyTech presenting this great technology that was going to basically release genetically modified mosquitoes. They were going to go out and mate with females, and there would be no offspring. Sounds wonderful. Does not work that way. And that's where the problems began, is when questions started to be asked of OxyTech. And instead of getting a clear answer, you got a song and dance and a sidestep, and this went on. And it grew. And so at one point, Key West says, look, we don't feel comfortable. The answers aren't real clear. We want you to show us three things. What's your protocol? What's your criteria for success or failure? By the way, who's your regulatory body? And they couldn't answer any of the three. So Key West basically gave them a vote of no confidence, in effect, by saying, we object to you releasing those mosquitoes until you tell us these answers. They moved the trial at that point from Key West to a small community called Key Haven. Well, that raised really large red flags at that point. Why did you move the trial? Well, here now they're in the county jurisdiction. So, and the county really was kind of hands off. So politics play a role in all these things, and they play a role in our regulatory agencies as well, which is a very disconcerting proposition when you consider they should be scientific and immune from politics, but they are not. So what really happens after that is that community of Key Haven became very educated and objected very loudly. Basically, OxyTech and our mosquito control department, who was lockstep, the de facto champions of OxyTech down here, would go in and do surveys that were extremely biased. And they would come out, oh, well, the neighborhood's overwhelmingly in favor. Well, we went behind them and did a very objective survey of about 60% of the population there, and it was 3-1 against. So it was very, very clear that there was a lot of, you know, manipulation and going on. And it continues today. I'll talk a little bit more about that when we start talking about the Cayman and Brazil.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. I want to get to the history of the GM mosquito and OxyTech, because mm-hmm. I know you're concerned about the Florida Keys. That's your home. You love that area and you want to protect it. But this is a global world. We're all connected in so many ways. And OxyTech has experimented already with GM mosquitoes.
Yeah. Yes, they have. They've released these mosquitoes. We do not know the long-term effects of what they've done. Nobody does, and that's never been studied. There's been a lot of things that have been omitted out of the study that are quite concerning. They've never studied the bite of the female. This mosquito's been around for 12 years. They have never performed any clinical trials to look at the bite of this female. And we recently discovered that four strains of amino acid in the modification that they put into this mosquito actually match up perfectly with allergens, known allergens, four known allergens to humans. And this is brand new. This is this week. So that becomes very scary when you know they've neglected doing clinical trials. What you have here is you have a company that is a for-profit company on a march to the market. And all they care about is that goal line, getting to profitability. And everything else gets tossed by the wayside, all your science, all your protocols, all your ethics, everything. And that's really apparent in everything that goes on with this company. And they're owned by Intrexon now in the United States. So let me talk a little bit about what we've learned this week from the Cayman.
Please.
All of OxyTech's reports, both Brazil and the Cayman, always come back glowingly. All right, 90% plus suppression of mosquitoes and everything. Well, that's great. That would be wonderful if that's really what was going on. But a series, 128 pages of emails came out over the past week from Dr. Alan Wheeler, who works at MCRU, which is or MRCU rather, which is the Mosquito Control and Research Unit, rather, MCRU, down in the Cayman. And they basically highlight all these differences in what the MCRU found versus what OxyTech was publicizing. And both Brazil and the Cayman took issue with the scientific practice of OxyTech in terms of how they were projecting numbers and performance and suppression. So OxyTech was claiming 90% suppression. MCRU at best saw 62%, and in some cases it was down at 51%. So when we look at Brazil, the gentleman Danilo Cavallo, who was in charge of overseeing the analytics for that those projects, three different venues where they tested, they all said plus 90%. You know, came out of OxyTech for suppression. He took issue with that number and actually made the statement that he had issues with their scientific practice, and his numbers came out somewhere between 60 and 70% suppression. So here, what the purpose of that whole conversation is, you have a company that represents one thing, and this is just one particular issue. But yet, when you actually peel the onion, you're actually able to get data. You find out it's really not what they have been promoting, you know, in public. And one other thing that the OxyTech did when we were able to get our hands on the contract, they had our mosquito control district, you know, looking at here in the Keys. That contract had them controlling 100% of the data that was published to the public. Mm-hmm. So we had no control over what was published. They did. So that's why they're responses are always so glowing, how their performance in the field. And, you know, when you're dealing with you know, an agent that is not trustworthy, you have to start from that point of view. And that's, you know, so every piece of data, every piece of information that comes out, you have to question, and you have to question more severely. You can't have any trust whatsoever. And that's really what we've, you know, come to believe now about this company. We've worked
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that they're lying about the success rate. It's not 90%. It's more like 60 or maybe 60 to 70. Isn't that good, though, 60 to 70%? I mean, we have a serious mosquito problem. Isn't some amount of suppression better than none?
Look, any of these SIT methods, you know, they that stands for sterile insect technique. Yes, 60% suppression would probably be a good suppression. You can't count on that consistently and so it doesn't even perform as well as the chemicals that, you know, typically are used. And what it doesn't perform as well as is just boots on the ground, self-policing, dumping water around your property, things like that, that actually work extremely well and are very cost effective because you engage the community to do part of that. So even if it's 60%, the problem when you start finding misrepresentations are that you have to look at some of the other concerns. Okay, mm-hmm. They splice this gene. All right, what happens is these mosquitoes die in a couple of days, but they really don't. When I investigated during the first, you know, regulatory review through the FDA, I found a chart that showed that up to about 18% of the mosquitoes live for 40 days, long enough for females to take two blood meals and lay two clutches of eggs. Now, let me remind you, this female bite has never been clinically tested. All right. And we know that there are amino acid strains that are identical to known human allergens. So you start getting a larger set of information and a larger set of concerns because they say, oh, it's harmless and all the mosquitoes die. And they really don't. So these mosquitoes are actually impressing their DNA into the wild population. And there are no long-term studies of what those evolutionary effects can be. We have no idea whatsoever because OxyContin doesn't want
to. Yes, I'm very concerned about the allergens that are found. The amino acid-related allergens that are in the female. So if a female that is remains alive bites, mm-hmm. someone could be affected and have a terrible allergic reaction, and we have no data on that or any kind of either way, whether it's harmful or not. And we don't know along the food chain either what happens when other bugs and birds consume those mosquitoes that have been genetically modified.
No, those studies have been pretty much non-existent as well. You know, OxyContin says they've done some studies, but there's no real evidence. There's nothing they've ever provided as far as, well, here's a published paper, here's anything. And another thing you won't find is any third-party objective review or replication of OxyContin's claims. Just doesn't exist. And so that's pretty daunting when you start looking at a track record of 12 years. That there's no third-party corroboration of anything they've ever claimed. It just doesn't exist.
Okay, so how is the EPA involved?
Okay, so originally the FDA was the regulatory body, and they went through a whole process. I actually met with the science team up in D.C. over this issue, and we asked them very clearly, look, process them through what we call an environmental impact statement, which is a regiment where objective scientists come in, help devise a way to evaluate the technology. And there's a lot of independence in that, a lot of, you know, outside, you know, input. So it's a very, you know, high hurdle, if you will. And that never happened. Basically, what happened was it became politicized I'll tell you the first part of the story. I asked them what scared them the most about the whole process that we were going through. And they said, oh, it'll become political and they'll force us to release a finding of no significant impact. And we'll have to put that out. Well, 11 months later, that's exactly what happened. The Energy and Commerce Committee grilled the chief scientist, Luciana Borio from the FDA. 2 weeks later, the finding of no significant impact came out. we were able to even withstand that, and the release didn't go on because of all the work we'd done on the ground here in the Keys. And we actually had a referendum scheduled. And so the whole issue went to referendum, two referendums, one for the small target community where the release was going to happen, and the other countywide. Well, we only had a month to try and educate our county. We lost on the county numbers, and we won by about a 3-1 margin in the community where the release was supposed to occur. So, again, with a little bit of education, people reject this technology. So what happened after that was the FDA, in their infinite wisdom, decided that they could not regulate this. They were trying to regulate it under a rule called an animal drug, and it was anything but an animal drug. So we explained that to them very early on. So they decided we were right after all the turmoil, and the referendum was, you know, pretty much, you know, on the border, and they didn't like any of that. And so they turned the hot potato over to the EPA, said, well, it's really, you know, these genetically modified species, if they're just killing off their own species, well, they're really an animal pesticide. They're not an animal drug. Now, if that animal was, you know, curing some illness or something like that, then they'd be an animal drug. So the FDA got rid of the hot potato and gave it to the EPA. So the EPA has it now, and we're in what we call an open comment period, where anyone in the U.S. can, well, even beyond anybody globally, can comment to the EPA. They're looking for, you know, scientific input and, you know, other input. People with standing basically just saying, look, I object because, you know, I don't want you to experiment on my body. Both these agencies, EPA and FDA, are under Health and Human Services. There is a rule called the Common Rule, and that simply states that you cannot experiment on somebody's body without their informed consent. Well, what effectively happens when you release females that are going to bite you, and you become part of this experiment, and you're going to have no informed consent. If the EPA approves this, there's no provision for them to come back and say, oh, but we want you to make sure everybody has informed consent that's going to be in the area because they could get bitten. That's just not in there. You're part of the experiment, whether you like it or not. So how Health and Human Services manipulates the use of the Common Rule, and this came out of the Nuremberg trials years ago, back in World War II. So this has been around for a long time. How they do that, we don't know. But they do. They somehow see subjectively around things when they don't want to use it. And, you know, we are petitioning that basically this requires informed consent by anybody in that area.
Do you have any state protection that can make a difference if the EPA actually decides to allow the GM mosquitoes?
That's very interesting. Yes, the state has jurisdiction over any pesticides that are used here. So this, even though it would come out of the EPA, there would have to be an MSDS sheet, you know, for this particular, quote, pesticide, and the state has to sign off on it. We don't have any way to judge right now which way the state would weigh in on that. We're feeling that they probably would permit it, but it's hard for us to say. You know, we're obviously going to wage that battle as well as we need.
Let's talk about mosquitoes for a minute. We were talking about GM mosquitoes, but just the subject of mosquitoes in general. Mosquitoes and other bugs, Lyme, ticks have been in the news quite a bit, and mosquitoes, and we're reading that more and more, they're more prevalent all over the place, maybe because of global warming, whatever the reason. There seem to be more, especially in this country, in cooler regions than ever before. And mosquitoes are, I think I read, they kill more people than anything. Should we be afraid of mosquitoes, and what should we be doing?
Well, you know, that's a really good point. All right, let's talk about two things here. First, the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes, absolutely, as the globe warms, these were tropical mosquitoes for the most part. And if you look at where they roam, it's basically that warm band across, you know, on either side of the equator. And this is what's called an Aedes aegypti. That's the only solution that genetically modified mosquitoes have right now. There are several other mosquitoes that fall close into that range. Now, these mosquitoes are what we call vectors, and they transmit these viruses called arboviruses for the most part. Now, you may be familiar with malaria. That's a different, the Anopheles mosquito is a little different, and it pretty much transmits the malaria virus. All right, but this is these Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus, which is also known as the Asian tiger. They are tropical mosquitoes. The aegypti pretty much feeds exclusively off of humans, lives in your carport or under your, porch, or lives around humans, can breed in a bottle cap. I mean, they're dangerous mosquitoes. And globally, mosquito vector deaths are about 750,000 annually. There's a whole series of other mosquitoes, too, that can transmit these, quote, arboviruses like Zika and dengue and West Nile and yellow fever and all those. There's another version called the Culex that's very concerning, the southern house mosquito. All of them are finding the habitat much more favorable. And the Aedes aegypti is actually traveling north, both here and in Europe. So it's a big concern, and it needs to be. But there are other solutions as well. And we'll talk about those in a second here. And the other solutions don't necessarily come with the risks that genetically modified do. But when you look at, these mosquitoes, all right, I don't want to get too far off the subject here, but let's go back to, the other alternatives that we have when we look at this. All right, we have another solution called irradiated insects, and most people are very familiar with that from agriculture and feel very comfortable. It's a pretty benign process. Mosquitoes are completely sterile when they release them, and they use those to kill off, when they mate, no offspring survive. We also have a solution that's made here in the U.S. by the University of Kentucky. Now there's been a spinoff for-profit company called Mosquito Mate that markets this now. But it's based on a bacteria that's harmless to humans because your body's too hot for the bacteria to live in it. And many mosquitoes are born with this bacteria. And about 65% of insects worldwide already have it. So what they do is they infect males only. And when they release males, it's about 1 in 250,000 as a female. But as I said, the bacteria is harmless. And what happens is the males, when they mate with females, 100% of the offspring die. They just are not viable. They never hatch. So we have alternatives to this. And we end up, in this battle, over a product. Because a for-profit company wants to drive it to market, and they've done just millions and millions of dollars of marketing. And that's the battle we're in, not whether there's something sensible out there, already available, by the way, because the EPA has approved one version of the Wolbachia solution for 22 states already. And they would have approved it for the entire United States, but it was really only tested in colder climates. And then we've already trialed the Aedes aegypti version down here in the Keys. And there's no controversy. People look at it, they learn about it, and they feel very comfortable with it because of the basically zero risk level for us. So, you bring up good points about, the climate and the fact that these mosquitoes are now infiltrating. But one thing they don't tell you about genetically modified mosquitoes is the fact that they're made using tetracycline as this antidote. I kind of went a little fast in the conversation. When they design the mosquito, when they insert this gene that makes them enable to, quote, have offspring, right? That's what they call a lethal gene. What they did is they made them dependent on tetracycline, an antibiotic, the most prevalent antibiotic on the planet, by the way, the most used antibiotic on the planet. So they made them dependent on this antibiotic. But the antibiotic, this whole strategy of using this antibiotic assumes that there's no bacteria on the mosquito. So we have the potential with this mosquito because we have a doctor down here, Dr. Jack Norris, who's worked on this subject extensively. And there is a likelihood that this mosquito could be promoting antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Wow.
Right. Now, that is a death rate of about 700,000 people a year globally. Even worse, the people that get affected with like MRSA, I have a friend that lives one street over here, and he had to have knee replacements. He was he's a Super Bowl ring, front line for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Great guy. And he couldn't get his knees replaced because every time they put him in, MRSA would come back up. So he's in a wheelchair.
Hmm.
All right. So we find a lot of complications out of antibiotic resistance. It's a much, much bigger problem than mosquito vectors as a threat, you know, globally. And in the year 2050, they project that deaths from antibiotic-resistant bacteria will be 10 million a year versus basically equivalent to what mosquitoes are now. So are we creating a bigger problem by this strategy to use tetracycline as the antidote than we are solving by being able to deplete mosquitoes with this particular technology, a technology that has alternatives that are more effective, cost less, and don't come with all the risks associated with it? So I don't know. I have to question something like that. And why are we doing this?
Okay, so what can we as individuals first we need to respond to the EPA. There's a link at the website responsibleeatingandliving.com for this interview. The deadline to comment is June 7th, 2018. And if you can, I encourage you to put your comments there and also sign the petition to stop GMO mosquitoes. But aside from that, what can we do to keep mosquitoes at bay and off of our skin?
Great question. All right. Now, the traditional way is one of the best ways, all right? When it rains around your house, you know, and sometimes that rain goes on for days, but it ends. When it ends, go out there and police your yard or around your area. Make sure there's no standing water. Pick up any trash. Trash is the worst part of it, you know, that trash just laying around collects water when you're not even paying attention to it. And these mosquitoes can breed, like I said, in a bottle cap, literally. So, you know, you want to be able to, the only way they can breed is if they have water. And this particular mosquito, what they do is they lay their eggs at the water line. And if the water recedes, the eggs go dormant until the water rises again. And then they wake up and basically hatch. So it's a very creative mosquito. It actually started over in the north part of, in the arid area of the Sahara. They believed that it was moist there at one point in time, and as it became more arid, they moved towards humans and evolved in that direction. And that's why they came up with these techniques to lay their eggs. So police your own area. Secondly, wear long clothes when you go out. The Aedes aegypti tend to feed during the day. They're very docile. They run away at the slightest movement. You know, they're very timid. And, you know, so they're a little different than most mosquitoes like that. Its cousin, the Albopictus, will attack you in a second. They're very aggressive. So, you know, different behavior there. But wearing long clothes, wearing repellents, policing your own areas, those are the things that you can do. You can also, most places have mosquito control. If you start having a mosquito problem, we tend to call our mosquito control. We like our mosquito control, even though we're in a battle with them over this issue. We believe in them wholeheartedly that they have kept us safe and allowed us to live in these islands that, you know, we have 45 different varieties of mosquitoes, and some of them you think would carry you away down here. They're so aggressive. But, you know, so you depend on your mosquito control to be part of the solution. And unfortunately, sometimes they have to use, you know, techniques where they spray. We don't like that. But, you know, sometimes that's the only technique that really works, believe it or not. And experts in this particular field on these sterile insect techniques will tell you that none of the sterile insect techniques will work if there's an outbreak. You will have to spray. You'll have to use other methods, you know, boots on the ground methods. Here in the Keys are where, you know, we have our mosquito control workers come out and just constantly work with the community on how to eradicate these mosquitoes, and they keep coming out and testing and spraying and doing all that in concert with the community. So, and that works most effectively.
I'm not a fan of pesticides myself, and here in New York, we have some spraying that goes on I think every year for mosquitoes, and you have to know what website to go to find out the schedule for the spraying to see if it's going to hit your particular area on a certain day, which is kind of frustrating. I would like a little more communication so that everybody knows when the spray is coming, so you can be indoors, you can keep your windows closed and wait till it's passed. So we could
maybe even
we could do a better job with
little,
that.
Maybe they have a little music thing like the ice cream cart to let you know they're coming, huh?
Oh, yes. More like ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Yeah.
There you go.
Mosquito spray music. I'm going to work on that. Well, Barry, thank you for coming on the show on short notice. I really appreciate it. This is a very important issue, and I'm glad you're working on it.
Well, I appreciate you helping to get the word out. I encourage everybody, please take a moment to go to your website and find the link for the EPA. Make a comment. It's open until June 7th. And also, please join us on the petition at change.org that Mila DeMare wrote. And let's get 1 million for Mila. And talk to your elected officials. Tell them your concerns. Let them, you know, be aware that this is a real subject and that they need to learn about it and understand it and defend us against it, because I do not believe this technology is safe. And until they prove it so, it should not be regulated for permit.
Thank you, Barry Ray, for joining me today. All the best.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, take care. Whoa. What did you think of that, folks? I hope that you take action and write the EPA and sign the petition. Would you do that, please? Thank you.